You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You know, we all have mentioned it's, you know, it was an experiment coming out of a pandemic where, you know, you have the choice of, are we just going to wait until someone else says that we can perform, or are we going to, like, you know, take
basically
the bull by the horns?
No promoters or, you know, agents were taking risks on booking tours. So they were just telling us to stay home, and we didn't want to do that. So we did it the first time and it worked so well that we did it again.
Yeah.
Because people love it. Like, because bands don't do it. Bands don't do intimate concerts where they actually hang out. That, you know, they'll do intimate concerts and then peace out, you know, but it's not like a meet and greet. It's like usually you get a photo and then that's it. But we actually hang out and it's a lot of fun.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen, and people out there in cyber world? My name is Benny Goodman. I'm here with Corey Pesa and Siobhan Cronin. And we have a show called 2020. And this week, we're going to dive right back into the Matrix with our good friend, Brock Richards, who, as you'll find out very quickly, was a surprise guest for himself.
Yeah, so we have Brock on, my husband, obviously, and guitarist in Starset. So for all the Starset fans out there, here's another episode. We're going to talk about coming back from tour and some of the stuff, mostly that Brock's been doing since we got back.
So this is like, I don't know, episode probably like number 20 of Starset fandom in the past couple of months. So this it might be the last one for a little while. I think we're gonna move away.
So
soak it in and enjoy this chat with the one and only Brock Richards. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of 2020. My name is Corey Pesa here, as always, with Benny and Siobhan. And this week we are joined by, how many Starset episodes have we done
in the last
like a couple weeks? But you get one more here with the one and only Brock Richards.
Yeah, it's the third one I've done.
Yeah. He's the great white buffalo, as we like to say. He makes
not
a rare
really.
Appearance.
I've been on here three times.
That's true. He's made
this
it on
this is the unofficial Starset podcast at this point. So can we ride some more coattails from Dustin in that way?
Can we just be honest, though? Because like we all like have crazy stuff going on, and like we don't want to not continue doing this show. So when in doubt, we're just like, get Brock. He's always fun to talk to. Because Brock is the rare one. Like, if you were to collect Brock, if you're trying to get the Monopoly piece before the Mafia, like, fuck that shit up, for McDonald's to win, Brock's the piece you need because he's the rare one in the Starset Voltron universe. But because Siobhan's married to him, she's like, Brock, I can't hear my audio. And he comes and fixes shit. We're like, you're the guest. And here we are. You're welcome, Starset fans.
Yeah, I was told this morning.
Yeah, he was woken up with a nice surprise of you're going to come on the podcast today. So that's where we're at. But no, I will say, though, we just finished our acoustic tour. And after talking to all the people, that's once so many people came up and were like, wow, I really enjoy your podcast. And a lot of people didn't realize they saw maybe just Ron's episodes or the more recent ones. And so I said, no, we've got like the whole group there. So if you want to learn about us, because through the Starset Media, we don't really, you know, talk about ourselves or like showcase our personalities in terms of like social stuff. So I think it's really cool. I mean, I've learned stuff that I didn't know about all of my bandmates, and it's a great platform to talk about it.
And it surely is. And all those Starset fans that are listening, make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast because we've got tons of awesome guests.
That's not right. Just, we have the insider scoop on Starset.
Like, don't think we won't pander to you. If you guys are the majority and you know, you're like, Brock's so hot. Like, we'll get Brock. Just ask. Comment below. Like, we never even ask. Like, just comment or like write to us or tell people at your local, you know, news station, like Brock Richards for 2020.
Yeah, I think we should. Yes, anyone. I would say definitely like send in your comments because that's I would like to get more feedback on the things that people like to hear about. So it's cool just having done the acoustic tour that, you know, people said some of the things they enjoyed, and it always informs what we can talk about. So
yeah, I've been keeping up with some of the like YouTube comments when they do come in. It's fun because I used to just avoid it as much as possible because it was 90% people complaining about Ben. But surprisingly, I think over the past like year or so, I've only seen like one or two of those. So I don't know if that's
I think the best part of that statement is that Ben did not even flinch when you said that. He was just like, okay.
He said, this sounds about right.
Originally, I was doing this for me when we first, because I was like, this is never going to be a thing. But now that like people seem to care, I'm like, all right, well, I guess if it's going to be the same people watching every week and they're just going to continue to eviscerate me, I might as well like curtail my neurosis. So, and let people talk. So, Brock, why don't you talk? Because we've just talked for like 10 minutes and our guest has said nothing. Brock, what's going on with you? How are you feeling? Did the time stop for you on tour? Like, or was that every day you were engaged?
No, I mean, I'm doing great. Let's see. Siobhan woke me up today and made me go to the gym and is now making me do this podcast.
So basically, I'm running Brock's life right now.
But I was happy to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm exhausted from the gym. I'm not super athletic.
That it would be hard to tell, though, because, I mean, when you're on stage, especially in the live show, I would say you are probably the most athletic-looking one in terms of movements.
Okay,
and
so
stage
I would just
presence.
Say I'm physically lazy. I like
well,
using
you can
my
have
brain,
the rock
not
and roll-
so much my body.
You have the rock and roll muscles, which is cool, man, because, listen, if you play in a band and you thrash your head every single night and you're holding a 277 from PRS baritone scale, like, you're going to get in better shape. I mean, not necessarily the same way if you go to the gym and like work out each of those beach muscles, but you'll get like the on stage, I could be on heroin or maybe I play guitar in a band look. And Brock has that anyway, since he's an ectomorph.
But
Moving
on. Why don't we touch base real quick? Cause this is the first time we've had to talk since you guys wrapped up the acoustic tour. So why don't we just kind of do a little summary of how that all went?
Yeah, Brock, why don't you go? What was your experience?
I mean, I had a blast. I love the acoustic tour so much because it's obviously different than what we normally do. And we actually get to interact with our fan base and more or less like our core fan base. So like the super fans and the people that come to multiple shows, they come to like every tour. And that's really how a band really latches on for the long haul. It's just if you have fans that are consistently coming to everything. So getting to sit and talk to most of those people, it was an awesome experience.
Yeah. And I will say, I'll jump in and say, I mean, Brock, who is like the soft spoken, doesn't like to elaborate on stuff, was the last man standing talking to everybody every night. And that's, I think that's one thing that's great about you is like, you invested so much time in talking to people. And I like looked on Instagram and, you know, followed different comments that people would post pictures and be like, oh, this was so great. I had such a great time. And so many people like called Brock out and was in like a positive way saying, wow, Brock spent so much time with me. I felt so special. This is awesome. And yeah, it was cool. I think you inspired
me. I would usually turn around and like the bar is empty from like all the band members. And I'm like standing there talking to a group of people. And I'm like, where'd everybody go?
Is this like the concept that like Ludacris has with that song "Hoes" in different area codes? You kind of got to put down your funk everywhere. Like you comment on things, you spend time with them, and then when you go back, bro, you get your hoes in different area codes. Except in this case, let's take out "ho," same concept, and just put like "devoted fan."
Yeah, kind of. I guess.
Yeah, that's right. No, but it is cool because I mean, you're right. That was a good thing that you said. Is like. Part of the longevity of a band is how engaged you are with different people in your fan base and the people that have been there since the beginning and like supported since early on. And a lot of people, when we were talking to them, commented on, oh yeah, we go to other VIPs or meet and greets and feels kind of like a conveyor belt you go through and they like shove you along a photo line and there's like very minimal interaction. So it felt really cool to hear that people actually found a lot of value in it and appreciated it. And they felt more connected to the band and more, I think more likely to continue to show up. And just like in any industry, if you make personal connections with people, they stick with you and vice versa. You know, there's just an appreciation there and it changes your experience as a performer too, just knowing who's out there, getting familiar with the people in different cities and stuff. So.
That's great.
Isn't it great branding though? Because like you guys, like you're like cartoon characters. You know, it's like, oh man, he's the one with that helmet and she's the one that's wearing that cool suit on the Dune planet. And it's like you get to meet you in real life and you guys really, first off, are amazingly talented and you're all very different. It's kind of like the X-Men, but you're all in Starset. So like I think it's amazing branding for you know, I know, let me guess, like Dustin and Ron sat and they're like, this is a great team building exercise, first off, for us as a band. But also, if we can interact directly with our populace and our main high echelon fans, it's going to help build that experience with the end user. So it's crazy because like those guys are kind of like my Facebook feed anticipating what I'm going to say. And it's like, how did they know I wanted the George Foreman grill? You guys are like that. And I think it's by walking around, talking to your guests, you're like VIP, you're like, no, this is going to be data collection.
Well, yeah, it's for anyone that listened to Ron's recent episodes. That was basically the theme of it is like, you know, he is very much a data guy. But yeah, you know, beyond that, like he mentioned, and we've all, you know, we all have mentioned, it's, you know, it was an experiment coming out of a pandemic where, you know, you have the choice of, are we just going to wait until someone else says that we can perform, or are we going to like, you know, take
basically
the bull by
the horns? No promoters or, you know, agents were taking risks on booking tours. So they were just telling us to stay home, and we didn't want to do that. So we did it the first time and it worked so well that we did it again.
Yeah.
Because what people love it. Like, because bands don't do it. Bands don't do intimate concerts where they actually hang out. That, you know, they'll do intimate concerts and then peace out, you know, but it's not like a meet and greet. It's like usually you get a photo and then that's it. But we actually hang out, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely like a party unique, band. And it fits well in with the relationship you guys have with your fans.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing now that you're off tour? What was step one when you get back?
Let's see. What did I do?
Well, Brock is still building his studio, yeah. So
doing a studio build out. And, you know, I you guys know that I built that desk, and then I, you know, had to wire everything, and that was a shit show.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think this is the place to bring it up. Because
always waiting on cables or custom cables and all this other stuff, and so it's been a learning experience.
What are you wiring up? Like, so just what's the general overview? What was the difference? You know, for anyone that knew that you were already working in the studio, what's this upgrade involve?
With the desk, let's see. So I got the new desk, and I have the Avid S3 controller. And so I've been patching and wiring all the inputs and outputs, the IO. And then I got into 500 series equipment. So got a bunch of preamps and outboard compressors and stuff like that that I'm integrating. So just trying to, you know, route all that to the patch bays, and, you know, just spending too much money.
Well, is the end game to like make beats?
No. I can make beats, but no, that's not what I want to do with my life.
Cause I bought, for Christmas, I bought one of my little nephews, an Apple computer, and I got him a little M-Box, and, already calling himself a producer, and he's gonna make beats. So I just feel like what you're doing seems very convoluted.
Well, I mean, we talk about this a lot.
I'm
because
messing.
You know,
well, are you gonna do whole bands? Like, what's actually going on in the Brock Studios? Are you really gonna be putting an orchestra down there? What the fuck?
I mean,
the end
goal is to find a space, you know, big enough for, you know, commercial space like that. For like a studio for drum recording, for instance. But nah, I live in the real world, and getting a nice drum room it's a hard thing to have at home.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to rent a commercial space and have it detached from my house. I'm more of like the home studio kind of guy, but sure, someday, like, you know, you can convert a garage with, if it's got a high enough ceiling and stuff, and create a drum room. So I mean, that's the end goal, but right now, no, it's just like a little project studio where I sub out drums. So you record those in another studio, but we can do everything else in my space.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm not tooting my own horn, and I'm sure Corey will look at me cross-eyed, but I have a basement studio, you know, a home studio, and I have tweaked now for 15 years multiple drum kits with every kind of mic, and I finally have like the creme de la creme of mics and all that sort of stuff. It's not a great room. It has some acoustic properties, but it's not a great room. I built some traps, or well, not me, Eric has built some traps for me and all of that. But when I get my, now that I've tweaked it all out and I get my drums and I'm sitting there in my studio, they sound like samples to me. I've gotten to the point where I go back and I play it and Paul looks at me and goes, I guess that sounds like 1984 Van Halen. I literally feel that way with a little bit of like, you know, reverb and stuff. And I don't feel like I'm missing anything. And I've walked into Sound City Studios before Dave Grohl got rid of it. And I actually played a drum set in there and Elton John's piano. And it's got great sound. But I have to think that if you're a really good engineer at this point, that you can almost replicate virtually anything to the point of diminishing returns where it doesn't matter. So do you really need a giant drum room is my question.
I mean, today's world, no. That's why I'm doing without it. But I mean, if you could, I mean, if you had the option, would you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I could make my dick 9 inches, drum, I absolutely would.
I think it's a thing of flexibility, too. You know, you can get good sounds in room like yours, Ben. And I have a similar setup now here where I'm recording in a low ceiling basement. Was never intended
drum
to be a drum
sounds
room.
Sick in all your records, Corey. The sick, so unless you're faking it.
Of course I'm faking it. It's all studio magic. But, you know, I can get a decent sound in what most people would look at as like not a studio. But then having had the chance to work in a nice drum room like we did when we were down in Florida working with Shannon, I see the flexibility and the ability to, you know, that entire record I mixed without, you know, bringing in any samples and like just being able to use the room and everything like that. And it's got this natural feel that I feel like you can get, you know, as with a workaround setup and using, you know, room samples and different reverb and stuff. But it's so nice to have this like space that you get recording in a big drum room. You don't need that for every record. If you're making like a, you know, a metal record, you don't want that anyways. So you can get away with just programming drums and, you know, layering some stuff in there. But it's certainly something to be said for having the option to, because a drum room has a character that you can kind of utilize.
Well,
you know,
let me clarify. I'd rather have an awesome drum room as well, but I'm saying that there's a lot of people that go, I can't do drums because I don't have, you know, $1 million to build a drum room and like an acre of space to make it the size of Sound City Studios. Whereas it's like, if you stop limiting yourself, like I can't do it in a 10-foot by 6-foot room, then if you know science and you know how to do, like you could get by almost anywhere. But I'm with you, Corey. If I could walk in and record piano like in a giant room.
The key is to make friends with someone who has a sick drum room and
a
piano.
Yeah, like that's why you don't want an in-ground pool. That's exactly. Expensive.
Yeah, you don't want a boat. You don't want a boat. You don't want a drum room. You don't want a pool. You want a friend.
Ben would live right in the middle of a neighborhood of people that have their own in-ground pool, the boat, the drum room.
My next
room,
door neighbor
the
has
awesome
a pool
microphone.
And a dog. And my
exactly.
dog goes and jumps in her pool.
There you go. That's right.
But when you are working in your project studio, like what are you generally doing right now? Are you writing? Are you doing stuff, you know, non-Starset related? Like how do you separate your work like that? Like are you working on solo stuff? Are you working with other bands?
Yeah, so other artists and you know, my own stuff, just jamming around and writing. And then if Starset ever does like any kind of extra like what do we do? We released a Trials acoustic thing that I did in my room, at least my part of it. And, you know, so it's just a little bit of everything, but mostly like, you know, singer-songwriter, things that you can get by without, you know, a big room. And like we can pre-pro drums, and I've got an electronic kit that I do. And then obviously everything samples. But if you really want that big drum sound, then you just, you know, sub it out. Like there's a bunch of studios in Columbus that are close to me, and we just rent out the space for $35 an hour. You know, like studios aren't very expensive anymore unless you go to like, you know, I guess the Hit Factory or something, you know, like giant studios. But there's all kinds of places with great rooms that you can record in for cheap.
Yeah, it's all those studios out there that have these giant like SSL consoles that they got to make their payments on. So they're like, please come in and do something because no one is actually spending $1,000 a day to come here anymore.
But I saw really how important an engineer is, because when we went down and did the Apocalypse Blues Revival record in Florida, we were working with Dave Fortman, and Dave Fortman used to have a huge giant studio. Now he's at his house, like in a high rise in Miami. He's like, yeah, I mixed the entire Godsmack record in this room. And granted, it's tuned, but it's like a back room in his place. And he has a pretty nice SSL console for like the size room. It's not like a real deal, full blown SSL console. He'll tell you that. But like, mm-hmm. it's amazing what you can do in a home studio now. And it's one of those things where you're really, there's always workarounds, but you're truly at this point, because of technology, only limited by how good you are.
That's true. I think, and one thing I've noticed just watching you is just like it's mostly about your ear, I suppose, and knowing what you want and what sounds you're looking for and what pieces of equipment and variety of things you can assemble to get that sound that you want. And yeah, so much of it comes down to just having that ability to hear it and envision it. That's not my talent at all. You know, I know when I don't like something or when I do like something, but knowing which pieces to put together like a puzzle to get that final result is my weakness. And that's what you're great at.
One of the coolest things I've seen recently, you know, like as recently as just a few years ago, people would say, you know, you can't mix in headphones. Like it was like, you need your $8,000, you know, a pair monitor. And it doesn't, you know, if you're not doing that, you're not at a high level. I recently heard an interview with was it Zach Cervini, who's done like every sick, like modern like record that's been out with like that heavy, huge, awesome sound. He did the latest Billy Idol EP. It's got this ridiculous like trajectory and momentum going. And he was talking about how, you know, when the pandemic hit, all the studios were closed. So he bought like a Mac laptop, a little like interface, and a pair of it might have been Sennheiser like HD 600 or something. And he's mixed like a shitload of like huge hits on his laptop with headphones, and then he'll go and check them in a studio like to dial in the low end, maybe to finalize them. But it's not as prohibitive anymore. It's like, if you know what your monitors sound like, if you listen to music in them and you know what you want it to sound like, it's crazy what you can get away with. Yeah,
well, that's the whole thing, is if you have a reference. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't mix in like Beats by Dre, because that's going to lie to you with like, you know, because it's a hyped headphone. Yeah. So as long as you have like a somewhat flat frequency headphone set up, then you can get by with just, okay, so this song is like this song, so I'm going to play a reference track and listen to it. And then basically at that point, you can work around any kind of, you know, weaknesses that your headphones might have, you know, so you just kind of match the spectrum with whatever your reference track is. And I think you can easily mix in headphones. I think a lot of people do mix in headphones. Sometimes they have to mix in headphones because their room sucks.
Well, don't you think that's been a big opportunity for headphones? Because I mean, the truth is,
yeah, they're killing it.
Well, I mean, you could spend $100,000 on reference speakers, but like, I mean, I have $2,000, AKGs here, and like, what more do you expect sound to do in your head than these fucking headphones? So it's like one of those things where it's you can actually, I guess on paper, get higher quality sound for less money by buying headphones, but it's just, you know, using them as a reference. But for years, people used NS10s from Yamaha, which were supposed to be shitty sounding speakers. And the whole thought process is, if you can get them sounding good on that, that you get them sounding good on anything. I'm wearing these Sony noise canceling headphones, which, by the way, like the entire market seems to think that these are like some of the best headphones, period. And one of the things I think is crazy is, because of the noise cancellation, when you put them on, it's like, whoo, and you get no outside ambient noise, which all these headphones, like, that's a huge thing, because if you're getting ambient noise, you know, Siobhan's doing her hair in the background, that will add, you know, why is the bass so fucked up in this mix? Siobhan had to have a fucking gig in her hair. But now, like, I don't even know if someone's being murdered in the room next to me, so I have to surmise that the sound staging
sound
on this thing.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, my mixes are perfect. I'm just sitting there, like, whatever. I'm, like, listening to, like, violins, and then in the next room, there's a bloody murder going on. I'm like, it's great.
But also, it should be said that if you don't know what you're doing, it doesn't matter what you're listening in anyways. So you kind of have to be able to make that, you know, correlation of like, I know what I'm listening for in these things here.
But that's the limit where you're the limit. That's what I'm saying. Absolutely. You're the first line of defense. But now you can't blame technology. Like a painter can't blame his paints. You can't be like, well, of course I don't have an SSL fucking board in a room at Sound City Studios. Because there's that dude that was in his bedroom, like Tom Schultz from fucking Boston, that's like, here's my record. And you're like, this sounds better than anything I've ever heard. I made it in my closet.
Yeah. Well, there's actually a
sometimes that's the vibe you need.
Well, I was going to say a funny story about this, and this was probably a year and a half or 2 years ago. I can't remember, but there's a singer that I work with here in Miami, and she's sort of opera crossover. And mostly what I do is like, I'll play strings for her, or I'll, you know, help get an ensemble together, like a little bit of musical director type stuff, work on arrangements. And one day she's like, oh, you know, I'm going to record this song, but I'm probably going to send it to some DJs and like have them remix it. So it's just kind of like a demo. You know, and she's like, well, let me come to your studio and like, we'll just record it. And I'm thinking, okay, well, like, I'm not really an engineer, but, you know, I've got like a U87 and like some nice microphones. And I had this little Apogee, like travel Apogee Duet. That was my interface. I had HS5 monitors, like no studio, basically, right? Just like a little home project studio.
That's all you need. No, that's actually a studio. Like, I think that's great.
That's
all
true,
you fucking need.
But coming back to having the talent to do it, which I do not, I ended up recording her vocals, and I'm thinking, oh, this is just going to be some sort of demo. And I did the best I could with like what I knew about engineering. And then she's like, oh, well, Brock is a mix engineer, right? Like, he can mix this. And when I gave him the stuff that I recorded, I think he was about to lose his mind, because he's like, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to make this work? I'm sure there were tons of mistakes that
I
made.
You know? There was times when she was like peeking the preamp and like it's just like clipping out, because it's a digital preamp, and it's just like it's just all the way just cutting off the top of the transient. And like, so obviously those takes you can't use, but I mean, it worked. She ended up using them, but I use Isotope RX the shit.
I was just gonna say, shout out to Isotope.
I cleaned up everything. I mean, first of all, those programs, the RX programs, are amazing.
They're magic.
Like, that's literally the reason you can do anything at home now. You don't need all this big fancy studio stuff.
But let's be real. If Siobhan knew what she was doing, let's say your brain was inside Siobhan's brain or in her body at that moment in time, you could make those vocals sound fucking amazing. Because like, there's guys, like Rihanna's going on tour, Chris Brown goes on tour, and they take like a fucking awesome preamp or whatever, and they're on their fucking bus recording vocals, and it's a number one single like 2 weeks later, because things are real fast. So there's no reason why you can't use those.
The equipment was not a limiting factor, and that's not what I was saying. It's entirely to say that with the right knowledge and the right ear, you know, just to set up how somebody records. And, you know, I can do stuff without messing it up, but is it the ideal situation? Do I know whether to add compression to this or EQ? Like, no, that's definitely his forte. But he took what I did and then managed to mix it mostly on headphones sitting in this same apartment, because I didn't have suitable monitors or a suitable room, and did like a killer mix. And it actually made it to Billboard for a week, like the song. Yeah, like Billboard top, I'll find the exact chart. But I was like shocked, because like it started as this tiny thing that it's like, I thought it was just going to be a demo.
Yeah, like pre-pro demo stuff.
Yeah, and you know, me already being a bit insecure at recording other people, I've gotten pretty good at recording myself, but you know, so starting
Brock's
with
like
that.
Your engineering training wheels?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've gotten way
better. I try to teach her stuff all the time.
Yeah, I've gotten way better, and especially with my own instrument. It's one thing, but I'm not a vocalist. I've never been a vocalist. I've never recorded vocalists, you know.
Can I tell you two things? One, don't ever record the compression if you don't know what you're doing in the first place. Straight to, like, you can always add a compressor afterwards, and that's fine.
Right, and I didn't, And then two,
it doesn't need to come even close to peaking, as long as you're not getting tons of noise. Like, have them yell. And make sure it doesn't peak.
And then
you're good. And then Brock could do whatever he wants.
Right. No, absolutely. And I did know those things going into it. But the funny thing, and I had, you know, very minimal experience ever recording anything, but the one thing I did notice that I assume everybody here encounters is you tell someone to test their mic, and it's like, okay, do it really loud. And then the second And then it comes to performance
time. And then they sing and they're like,
yeah! But then on top of that, when you're in a little project studio and someone's listening through their takes, and if you've set it so that you're not even close to peaking, they're like, oh, why is it so quiet? Why does that wave look so small? You know, and it's a little bit hard them, sometimes.
What the fuck do you know? Well, if you're an engineer, you'd be doing this your fucking self. Stop staring at my computer. It's none of your fucking business.
But I have been subjected to some pressure of like turning up the preamp by people that I've worked with. It's like, oh, well, I want this to like seem like it's louder or something. And that's where
there's
skill
a button
comes in.
On. What you need to learn is there's a button that can actually make your transients look bigger to people. You just go,
right. Like, oh. Well, I know that now. Yeah. But anyway, from start to finish, you know, not the most ideal situation. Recording in a pretty terrible room with minimal equipment and then somehow turning it into something that's now on Spotify and sounds great on like all different systems.
Yeah, and that experience is better than 4 years of audio school, I promise you. You probably
well,
learn more lessons
irony.
That you'll never make those mistakes again. You'll always consider that in the back of your mind, and that's, you know, you can read 100 books, but that's the best way to learn it.
Well, and on top of that too, just like, you know, not that I necessarily should have said yes knowing where it was going, but if I hadn't, none of that would have happened, you know. So I think there was a lesson to be learned there of just like, you know, sometimes the situation won't be ideal and you won't have what you need, but you do it and you find a way to make it work, you know?
Yeah, I would just say, like, once the audio's in the computer, there's nothing you can't do in the computer. But on the way into the computer, I think is where the money needs to be spent. So, like, you know, if you want outboard gear or like fancy preamps and microphones, you know, that's where you spend the money. Once it's in the computer, I mean, you can do anything you want in today's world, in my opinion.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's why I always say Kemper and Fractals are so fucking awesome, is because, you know, hearing an awesome amp, you know, like in your house and getting that to sound like how you're hearing it in your house is a work of, it requires artistry and understanding science, where it's like you plug into a Kemper or a Fractal, it's like plugging into a keyboard, where basically all you need to do is make sure the volume isn't peaking, Siobhan, and then it's like, perfect, it sounds like Van Halen, perfect, it sounds like a grand piano, and it's perfect every time with no noise. And that's one of those things, is that we're getting to a point where technology is so good that really it's just about, does it sound good to the end user? Because there's no reason why you can't get good sounds now. They're really, I mean, and there's diminishing returns. Like, of course, if I use a Dumble amp with, you know, a U87 with a bunch of cabs, and then there's an SM57s, and they're all in phase, and like, I can make it sound better than my Michael Britt, amp simulator inside of my Kemper. But no one, almost no one's going to notice. And what you need to do to get that is crazy. So there's no excuse. And Siobhan, what I was saying to you is, it's, you keep downplaying that you barely had a studio and you had a bad room. Doesn't matter that you have a bad room and you had more than you needed for a studio. Your bottlenecking was you. Because you have this great guy right here who fixed it all, which also shows that Isotope, even if you don't know what you're doing, you kind of still can make a Billboard hit. Like, so... it's really limited again by you. It's not the shitty room. It's just, it's the person who doesn't know what they're doing.
I'm 100% on board with you. And I try, I mean, I really try to be as interested as I can in getting better. And I am way better than I used to be, but it's pretty amazing how bad you can be with audio.
Do you ever
stuff.
Think that Corey would go to Shannon Larkin and say, it's because we have a shitty room?
No, of course. I mean, no.
Would he ever use that as an excuse?
Talent, you can make, yeah, of
He'd
course.
He'd figure
not.
It out. You'd never tell them that.
No, but if you have the skill and you have the knowledge of how to work around that, that's different. But if you know that you have a bad room and you also have no knowledge of how to fix that problem, then you're really screwed.
Yeah. But I will just working in bad rooms, most of my life, I will say that it's great now that sometimes I get to work in nice rooms, because the things you learn from having to, you know, fix mistakes or like salvage things are like some of the best lessons, so that when you get like, you know, good tracks, you get good source material and you just go like, holy shit, this is like, I'm just going to add a little bit of EQ here. And it's like, perfect. It's like, instead of like, you know, a million little notches. I remember, I think it was like one of the Justin Bieber tracks, the guitar part, the main lick or something, was recorded by like Ed Sheeran on a tour bus. And I read a an article with the mix engineer, and I don't remember who it was exactly, but he talked about how like his EQ, he had like four or five like notches that were like, you know, minus 30 dB to get rid of like these weird ringing frequencies. But then you have like, you know, this multi-platinum record that no one would ever know was recorded, you know, probably like with a couple of beers in the back of a tour bus. And it's just,
yeah,
knowing how to, all those little lessons, how to fix things is super important. And it gets you the, you know, the higher quality stuff, makes it that much better.
You got to turn the engine off on a tour bus though, because it's just like, oh,
nah, you just high pass it. That's what I do to Siobhan's audio when we're recording, when you guys do the bus podcast.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
I have my sub on. I'm like editing the podcast with my sub on, and it's just,
oh,
like, rumbling. It's like a movie trailer in my studio.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, so, you know, going back to the original question of what are we doing? So all of these experiences have informed the new build out of this studio. And it's at, like, as an outsider, it's pretty amazing to watch the difference between kind of a sort of project studio and one that you actually intend to record other people, and incorporating patch bays and stuff that I didn't even know about, and patch cables and DB25 cables, and building a desk that doesn't have any reflection or whatever, you know? So it's a pretty massive overhaul. He's making a joke about another thing I don't know about. Okay.
Frequency cancellation off the desk. So
right. Yeah.
No, I think
I tried to minimize it. I didn't get rid of it.
Yeah, it's a black hole of you know, things to consider when you're building a studio, when you're doing things, when you're buying gear. You know, gear acquisition syndrome is a very, yep, very dangerous thing, and it sounds like you're getting into it with like the 500 series stuff. I'm hesitant to get too deep into that, because I'm kind of going through the same thing myself, except I'm not using 500 series things, because I figure that limits me to only the rack space I have available. And if I get a 500 series, I'll get 20 more pieces of gear. And it'll be, you know, by 500 series for our listeners and viewers.
That's the dangerous thing.
That just, if anyone's ever seen like a rack, you know, it's these long pieces of gear like this that go, and you see them stacked in a studio. 500 series are like basically like miniature versions of those pieces of gear, so you can fit more into a smaller space, therefore you can spend a lot more money and fill your studio with more things.
It's also kind of like you can travel with it, you know, like you can bring your entire input rig anywhere you go. That's why I went 500 series.
Well, all right, now you've made me justify it. I'm gonna buy some 500
series.
Yeah. So With that, you know, you got the studio that you're building, and you know, that's probably going to be an ongoing process, I imagine, you know, for the foreseeable future. Sure. Aside from that, you know, when you get back from tour, like, how are you spending your days?
Just like different, like little, I know I'm a hobbyist, so I do a little bit of everything, man. Like, I don't, and it changes all the time. So what it's usually in between, mostly audio stuff. Usually when I get home from tour, I have a couple of days of being a total piece of shit and not getting off my couch and, you know, playing video games or going to all my favorite food spots, you know, but and seeing friends. But whether it's, you know, some kind of audio stuff, woodworking. I just actually, me and my 91 year old grandpa just went and we bought a new table saw for our wood shop. Pretty excited about it, because it's like a real big boy table saw.
You should totally check out my buddy, and Corey met him back in the day. He had a crazy idea for a television show that just wasn't going to work, but his name is he has a show called Woodworking with Tommy Mac, and he replaced Bob Vila. And he's like one of my friends. I met him years ago as a salesperson for Circuit City. He was a dick. He drove me nuts, but I was so like meticulous with him. He came in the next day with Cuban cigars to thank me for like not like punching him in the face, even though he's bigger than me. And he's one of the greatest builders ever. In fact, they did a Discovery show on him where he went into RISD, the Rhode Island Institute, mm-hmm, to go get this like $20 million 14 or 15 foot tall cabinet that like nobody believed that any artisan could like make something of this caliber anymore, and he recreated it. Just like took it apart and like recreated this fucking thing. He can build anything, and he teaches how to build. Like, I actually, it's so sad, but underneath, like over here in my house, I have a Babinga. He made this. It's beautiful. It's, there's no glue or anything. It's all with like joints, and it's insane how it is. But it's a giant Babinga bench, and I have just a bunch of boxes and shit on it because I'm a hoarder and I have no space for anything. But like, go look up woodworking with Tommy Mac, and you'll love that guy because he just is like, here, Brock, here's how you build anything you want to fucking do. And I guarantee that you'll know how to do it, especially with a table saw.
Yeah, I mean, I'm learning stuff every day.
And I believe in you, man.
I'll definitely check that guy out.
Yeah, woodworking we'll have to with send Tommy a, Mac. A picture of the desk so that you can, I don't know if it's too late to put it in the show, but you can show it off. So I've got videos of you making it and all that stuff, so. That's been Brock's together. Main project,
it
was, yeah.
It took way too long, mainly because I didn't have the tools that I needed to do it, you know? So you always have to have a workaround. So.
You should put spalt maple veneer over the whole top.
What is that? No.
Like, just make it look like it's live, like wood. No?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one more thing. Just cut a 2 millimeter piece of wood and put it over the entire top is what I'm asking him to do.
I think you should do contact paper.
Contact paper.
Give it a real classy look. With all the woodworking and the music and all the things that kind of come together, have you ever thought about doing any like guitar building?
No.
No?
that's about a hard that too.
No. I got a buddy that builds guitars and he's a really good luthier. But it's there's too much mathematics involved of like, And I'm too much of a perfectionist, so like, I just think it would go horribly south, real quick. Because you know, I'd want it to have that RG wizard neck type action, and you know, I would never make anything that straight.
Somehow you made a desk, so I don't know about that, but
no. But he's totally right, because if you go up like these compound radius fretboards, like, do you know what a compound radius is? It's because if you start down here, it might be like 3 inches around, and up here it's like 2 inches and 3/8, and like it does an asymmetrical or even not asymmetrical. Asymmetrical, asymmetrical, kind of carve, so you can get that feel. So when you get up here, it's a little bit more buttery than down here, where it's like the big cowboy chords, and it's And are you gonna do a 25/5 scale radius or like a 27 baritone scale radius, or keeping like, are we doing 24 frets? It's way too many mathematics to get it perfect. And then it's like, but do you get true temperament frets, because that mathematically means it's always in tune, or do you get the Evertune bridge, which looks disgusting but works perfectly, but then I'd rather someone else do it.
Yeah, well, speaking of Evertune, you did just
got
some...
a couple of those.
Yeah,
they work awesome.
So I got home from tour and was able to pick them up from the shipping place, because they came in while I was out on the road. But basically, I hit up Evertune saying I was interested in their stuff, and their one of the reps got back to me, and they said, hey man, like, we'd love to, you know, work with you. So I sent them two guitars, and they sent them back. And I mean, it's a pretty incredible piece of engineering, and it's pretty awesome. And like, everybody's like, yeah, but you can't bend. I'm like, bending's so easy. You just like, you pop your tuner peg up to the right below the threshold. So then when you bend, you can get your bends in and then pop it back down, and you're perfectly in tune.
For our listeners and viewers, can you just give a quick summary of what an Evertune system is?
Okay, so an Evertune, basically, I tune low. That's why I wanted to use one. So when I get to my really low tuning, the strings are very slappy. So they go sharp a lot because they're so loose for the low tunings. So basically, if you get an Evertune, what it does is it will adjust the tension of the string so it doesn't go sharp. It keeps the same tension whether you're bending the string and adding tension to it. It'll relieve the saddle and basically keep that guitar in tune. So you can't, so if you're jumping around on stage, you can't pull chords out of tune. If you're tuning low, it'll help with, you know, the that low octave down E string going sharp.
Well, that's one of the things I've been saying forever. So one of the reasons I love my my Buckethead baritone guitar is it's a 27-inch scale, which is humongous. But then when I play stuff, it's like, it's so in tune. My hands are like this. Huh. But the Evertune bridges, I mean, it's... So for me, it's kind of like someone like smiling with braces. I don't like the look of it because I like vintage guitars. But then again, yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've recorded and I'm like... Ugh, because especially when you're like playing a 6-string guitar, like people get 8-string guitars because they're like set up for that. Like I just say tune down lower. But when you use different gauge strings and all that, the tension does become a problem. And even with my buddy Hector, he's playing bass over in Mexico. He had to detune his bass guitar string, and he was going sharp all over the place because he was digging in. And I had to Melodyne that whole fucking track because, you know what I mean? And there's nothing you could do about it on a normal bass. So that's such an incredible invention, and I will not shit on it. I think it's incredible, and I think I want all my guitars to have it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm more like, you know, if I had to choose, I would choose to play live without an Evertune in the studio. Like if you're just doing rhythm guitars, just throw an Evertune on it, and then you don't have to worry about it. Everything's perfectly in tune for the recording. If you want that musical vibe, though, you can't use an Evertune. Like that perfect imperfection of being like a true player, like that's what it would take away. So certain things, like you wouldn't play jazz with an Evertune. You wouldn't play a lot of, you know, even some like proggy stuff. If there's a lot of lead stuff, you wouldn't use an Evertune, at least on those strings.
Are you saying don't hate the player, hate the Evertune?
Well, sometimes if they use an Evertune, I guess. But, but I mean, they're great in so many ways. I put them on my super low tuned guitars because that's a struggle that I've had live, is, you know, just slappy strings. And I usually used on my low string, on my 7-string, I use an 80 gauge. That's like what? That'd be like the second string on a bass. Or maybe the third. I don't know. Whatever. I'm not a bass player. But basically, it's way too big. Yeah. It's way too big of a string.
That's wild. You know?
So it kind of makes it.
It goes through your nut. Did you have to adjust the nut on it to even get that thing to go through?
Oh, yeah.
That's a fucking huge string. Like, yeah. So for people that don't know, there's a nut, which is a little piece of plastic or whatever, that bone at the top where the string has to lie there, and an 80 is so thick that it'll just go and fall off because it won't go into the groove. So like you have to go and like shimmy that shit so that 80 goes on that guitar, even though it's a 7-string. In fact, just be a man, get an 8-string, or just get a bass or a Chapman stick.
I was going to get an 8-string, but I'm a PRS artist and their 8-string is $14,000. So I said, nah, I'll get the 7-string. Thanks.
It's just
because the only
strings
one they have is like a custom or a private stock 8-string. And it's like $14,000.
I think it's time for the Brock Richards signature 8-string guitar, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Also, I don't think I have big enough hands for an 8-string.
Mahon, but let me ask you this. If you had your own signature guitar, would it be an 8-string?
No.
How many strings would it have?
6.
Right answer.
Okay, elaborate.
I mean, I love 7-string guitars. They're great, but I just love the neck of a 6-string.
Well, you know? Dude, listen. My feeling is, and you know, I sound like an old curmudgeon, but like if you can't play like Steve Vai on 6-strings, you don't need a 7th. Just tune that shit down. Like that's literally what it is. Like you don't need more strings. Like you just need to tune your guitar down and practice a lot more. And then people who have 8-strings, it's like, okay, Tosin Abasi, proven you should have 8-strings because you're a fucking asshole. Like you play the bass part, you don't actually even need anybody else on stage. You're like the Ed Sheeran of metal. Like you should get rid of everybody. You should just be hitting it and tapping it as you're playing. You don't need a drummer. But that's Tosin Abasi. That's not us fucking idiots that barely can play Mary Had a Little Lamb on a 6-string. What you want, and this is what I would do if I was going to make the Brock Richards, like if I didn't know you but I was a luthier, I'd make like a 27-inch scale, 24-fret, nice, thin, and happy 6-string, but like long, with big ass fucking frets so that you could play down here with your big giant 6'9" hands that you have and play that C, and it's always going to be completely in tune. And you could still use like a 65 string on it, but it's long enough where it's going to pull it where you have some fucking tension, yeah. Which is why you can have a tremolo bridge on that shit.
I mean, that'd be awesome. The tremolo bridge is probably my favorite gun, for sure.
Yeah, you could get a tremolo bridge that doesn't have to be a Floyd Rose or whatever, and it actually stays in tune, and those guitars exist. You've won. Like, so if I could get my own model, I'd have a tremolo. People are like, what? If you bend, it's just gonna... No, tell them to figure out how to make it where if I stretch my strings, it doesn't go out of tune, because those bridges exist.
I just need you to go to bat for me.
That's right.
Like, this is what Brock wants.
Yeah, well, but you have to tell him it's somebody else, because Paul Reed Smith personally has it out against me. And Bev, even though she loves me, I love Beverly.
He just has a restraining order against you. That's
yeah. She's like the buffer to Andrea, which is his assistant. And if they're like, oh, this is a great idea, and then they're like, oh, it came from the Neurotic Guitars, Paul's not going to like this. So just tell them you just have a friend, and I'll talk like the guy on Inspector Gadget.
You'll get a voice changer.
Yeah. Put me in all the dark, like you know what I mean? Like I'm on like one of those drug shows where like they can't RSO crystal meth. So when are you guys going next on tour? Like, I mean, like, what's the next steps for you guys? I'm sorry, Corey. Did you have a better question than that? We could usurp my question.
That's a great question, Ben. We'll stick with yours.
Nothing until the end of February. We go to Europe.
Yeah, Europe, which has been rescheduled now, I think, for the third time because of COVID. So, yeah, it's been a few times coming.
Yeah, we haven't been in like, what, 2019? Since
before, yeah, before the pandemic.
Yeah.
How do you guys do in Europe? Do people like you over there?
Yeah, we do pretty well.
No, I asked because like,
what if like, they said no? It's like actually they fucking hate us.
Well, no, because there's bands like Van Halen never did well. Never did well in Europe. They weren't a European band. They're a huge American band. Even Aerosmith is more of a huge American band than they are in Europe. Like it'd be much smaller places. But some people are way bigger in Europe. Like Tremonti and Alter Bridge go to Europe and play fucking huge theaters. Whereas here they play, you know, House of Blues. It's a different world out in Europe.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, I think across the board, we do very well in Europe. And in some cases, I think even better there than we do here. And it's interesting.
Certain
countries. You know, it makes me wonder
like
what are the elements.
Like Belgium, like you guys more?
Germany. Germany's great.
Germany, Italy, some of the Eastern. Like
Italy's
when we
good,
did,
yeah.
Poland, I think, or Czech Republic. I think they all are really intense about it. We always
Switzerland, not so good. Those are usually
smaller shows, yeah. But I mean, especially like when we would go to Russia, which unfortunately we're not going for various reasons this time. But yeah, Russia, we always did really well. And years ago, you know, I mean, when our most recent headline tour, which, you know, of course, everything is affected by COVID, but, you know, we're playing headlining House of Blues type venues. But years ago in Russia, in Moscow, we played, I think, to 3,000 or 4,000 people with no support act.
You guys are in Miami right now, right?
Mm-hmm. We are, yeah.
How long are you guys hanging there for before you get back to the studio build?
Basically like about a week and a half. Yeah. So not too long. It's, you know, it's a lot of back and forth. I mean, sort of switching over to my experience after tour, it's like I generally come straight back here, you know, spend a few days, but then it's kind of back to, you know, my other life of various orchestra concerts and private events and working with other artists and stuff. So yeah, I mean, Brock was getting his studio built out and kind of got everything set up, and then he came
down. I
still
got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and I'm putting him to work
even
as my
with,
sound
like,
guy.
The company
week.
Of it. I'm not really a business kind of person, if that makes sense. I'm a hands-on, like I use, you know, businesses. That's what I got Siobhan for. She's gonna handle that for me.
I'm the talker. He's the one that does the technical stuff.
Nice. I like to nerd out, you know.
Yeah.
Anything that I can nerd out into.
Well, I mean, fortunately, you may say that you're inept at business, but like, I mean, Corey and I are staving off destitution usually month by month. I mean, Facebook Marketplace has been a really, really good recourse of me selling some of my hoarding stuff so that I can pay my mortgage and not have to work at Dunkin' Donuts. So, sorry, guys. I know you may not be a business dude, but like, it seems like with those vocals that are worth more than my car, you're doing all right. That's called business savvy. Or acumen.
Maybe I just don't like it. How about that? I don't like business. First of all, I'm too nice for business, and I know that. So I usually just...
It's hard. Yeah.
It's stepped on.
I mean, we all know here, music is a hard industry, and it's like you're always having to make choices of like... you know, how to conduct your business, how to deal with people, who you want to deal with, how to build something, what to invest in.
And, I'm more like, do I pay my electric bill or my gas bill?
Well, anything with music and you know, audio and all those things, there's no like general price chart for how you get compensated or what you charge. And that can be a scary thing. Especially, you know, once you get a little bit of, you know, reputation and experience and like a portfolio, it's a little easier. But like to go to someone and say, give me money to do something that I like to do, please. It's really tricky.
I mainly mean like, you know, like filing, you know, for your tax ID number and your website and web design and logos and, you know, whatever else,
promoting yourself
and getting that's not me. Look at my Instagram, like I live my life. I don't get on my phone, and I don't, you know, so that's always hard for me, mainly because I don't enjoy doing it. I would rather do
To get an intern is what you need.
And Siobhan, what are you doing?
That's right. I'm the intern.
My intern.
We're each other's interns.
Yeah, here's the sad part is I work on my social media every day, and I feel vapid. I feel self-centered. It makes me feel sad inside because I feel like Britney Spears a little bit, where I'm just dancing for nobody in the same room every day wearing yellow, which supposedly means help.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
There's like chanting music on in the background, but it says original audio, but it's like Anya. Like, that's how I feel every single day, man. So like when I sign on for like go live on Instagram or Facebook, I'll be sitting there for 3 minutes and it'll be like two people watching me and they just sign off. You could not have signed on to your connection for 3 years. And if you go to live, I guarantee you right now, like Brock Richards goes live on Instagram, you'll have like 300 people watching you. So that's the important part, is that people give a fuck. Doesn't matter how bad you are. They care about you. Try having no one care about you, Brock. No one cares about me.
But it's an interesting discussion because like I think about when I don't really do TikTok at all. I don't even know how to make a TikTok. I've tried. I can't figure it out. But, you know, a lot of the kids, you know, like in their 20s or whatever, it's like I see it's like they're doing these videos every day. And I'm sort of looking at this and thinking, OK, here I am. I'm a musician and I'm building a product of some sort. And, you know, I sometimes feel the pressure that I should be doing stuff like that, too. But sometimes I look at it and I'm like, but now you're sort of chained into this life of having to constantly crank out videos and crank out short form stuff that people are just maybe watching 5 seconds, 10 seconds. And at what point do you turn into an online entertainer forever?
Yeah, it's a separate gig to be a content creator.
That's why I
used to like take time to like make, you know, just content for even Instagram things, make some video. I had a blast doing it, but it took a lot of fucking time. And it would be like, you know, you get that little like dopamine hit, like, oh my God, like, oh, everyone likes it. It's great. And it's like, well, all right, well now I need to make another one if I want. And that's another like, you know, week's worth of work. Or I could have clients come in, I could work with people, or I could play gigs, or I could do the things that I like to do anyways. And it's like, not that internet broadcasting yourself clout, but you know, that's what I want to do. So it's weird to have that, like, if you want to do it that way. And then you see the people that do both and you're like, fuck them. What do they have, like, unlimited motivation? Like, I don't understand that. But
Well, that's what I was confused by, Corey, because like with Britney Spears, like I always was informed, don't do for free what you get paid to do. But then she's dancing in front of her camera every day and kind of singing along with Nine Inch Nails. And I'm like, but why are you doing that for free? And she just does it every day and does the same things.
I don't know if she should be a role model for you, Ben, but I think
Well, here's the crazy thing, dude.
She's a different study, though, but go ahead.
Well, so have you guys seen the Netflix documentary, like, about Britney Spears, like, with her conservatorship and all of that?
I watched part of it. I didn't finish it, but
it's amazing because, like, she was literally a slave. Like, she wasn't allowed to do anything.
She said that she was crazy.
I'm talking about she couldn't make phone calls. Her dad would have to legally mandate her to be home by 9 o'clock, and the police would go collect her during her height of her fame. She made no decisions for herself, and everyone was like, "Free Britney." And I watched this documentary, and I'm like, "Holy shit! This is the most scary, hell, crazy science fiction movie that's actually happening to somebody." And then now you go onto her Instagram, she's genuinely gone out of her mind, and you're like, "Holy shit! Maybe her dad should start a conservatorship and make her a slave again, because she's doing some crazy." She's just like bicycling around in her underwear around the neighborhood. Like, she's got like makeup problems. Like, she, I don't know how she ever danced professionally, because it's what, bro, she needs, it's crazy. My whole life has changed because of that. I just want you to know. Go watch Britney Spears and read the comments. And I'm not saying this to be funny. I'm saying, like, it's like watching the most insane car crash I've ever seen in my life.
I don't know how we ended up here, but the show's over.
Well, I mean, what did we get from this podcast? We need to help Britney.
Well, I think we need to trust that Britney, as a free person, may or may not be crazy. We cannot say for sure, because we can't be in her head. She is doing some wild dances on Instagram.
Her teeth are receding. No, her teeth are receding. I noticed this in a lot of the comments.
I'm more concerned about your involvement in Britney Spears' Instagram than her actual Instagram.
I wasn't involved until I saw what was going on, and then I became concerned. And then I started reading the comments, and then I was completely enthralled. And I can't help but just, because I watched that thing, and I, for a very long time, said, shame on all these people that have been in Britney Spears' life and have taken away these liberties that should be given to anybody. And now I've gone on to her page, and I'm like, what drugs is she literally on? And holy shit, because her husband's posting completely normal pictures every day. I'm confused.
Well, we'll never know, because once again, Instagram and TikTok are not reality, and every person is different in that regard. I don't know.
Why are her videos all in the same room, Siobhan?
I don't know. It's a good question. We should have a whole episode on Britney Spears. We can have a panel discussion about it.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening or watching this, why don't you comment below on how fascinating this topic is right now? And
No, Corey, I fucking shit you not. Just do me a favor for the next 2020. Go onto Britney Spears' page for 10 minutes today and just walk around, watch around, just go through a few posts and read anything and watch what she's doing, and tell me that this is not legitimately mystifying.
I'll consider doing that at some point. But right now, I need to get ready for a gig, so I think we got to wrap this up.
All right.
Brock, thank you, as always, for being an unwilling participant in our podcast. It's been a pleasure.
I'm here to waste everybody's time. It's all good. Just let me know when I can waste more people's time.
I will close out the episode by saying that Brock looked at me today and said, I'm helping you out. I need to eat before this episode. And I had to order Uber Eats like right away, because I'm like, oh my gosh, we haven't eaten yet today. And Brock is going to be grumpy if we don't eat. So,
well, she made me go to the gym. I was hungry after I got out of the gym.
I know how to cook, but I don't know how to keep groceries in my fridge. So that's the bigger problem. Yeah. Sort of like my audio problems, except
I was just trying to feed us.
Okay? Go with HelloFresh.
HelloFresh.
That's my plug. Or any of those other things. I like those because they just send you the exact ingredients you need, and you don't have to buy all these things you throw away at some point.
Dude, three burritos for 99 cents in the freezer, and one of those burritos is enough.
All right.
That too. Guys, check out starsetonline.com for the upcoming tour dates in Europe. And Brock, anything else you want to let people know about?
No.
But stay tuned for his studio build out. We're gonna hopefully get
their
business
going. Trying to get something
going.
Any thoughts on the Ukraine conflict you want to pump in before? No, I'm just kidding. We appreciate your time, man, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you, as always, for checking out this episode of 2020. Please visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is from episode number 66, featuring John Denae of Anthrax and Shadows Fall. Check it out.
These legends, like the first few days of Ozzfest, I was having amp problems. And I just kept fucking blowing my amps for some reason. I don't know why. Nobody could figure it out. And even all the techs, like Iron Maiden's like, I don't even want to plug in my shit after watching you. Like, they're afraid to use the power. Yeah. And so I was just having problems. And Zach Wilde was just like, hey, man, you can use my stuff if you need to. Whoa. So I did a couple of gigs on Zach Wilde's rig. Just, you know, insane. I mean, if you told me that when I was 12, there's no way I would believe that I would ever leave. Never mind play through or meet him, but then be on the same stage and be able to have that chance.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.